You are Locked On Broncos, your daily podcast on the Denver Broncos, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
And the Denver Broncos have taken Super Bowl 50.
That's right. You are Locked On Broncos. It's time to roll up our sleeves and drop some knowledge. I am Chad Jensen, the publisher of MileHighHuddle.com, and with me is my co-host, Luke Polglaze, a semi-pro football coach and NFL draft analyst. Luke, what's good, my friend? You ready to talk about some of the happenings at Dove Valley this week?
Well, if you give me about 5 seconds, I'll finish rolling up my sleeves here for the Bronco talk. I'm excited. The sleeves are up now, and I'm good to go.
Well, we are committed to bringing you this daily podcast that focuses entirely on the Denver Broncos. And as you can tell, we're trying to do it 5 days a week. So far, we haven't missed a day since we joined the network. And we're not here to just report the news. We're going to talk about the news, but we're here rather to do more of a deep dive on your favorite team. So help us out. And it really helps us out when you retweet the episodes on Twitter and you share them on your Facebook and other social channels. And check out what we're doing over at MileHighHuddle.com. Killer premium Broncos content. Again, more deep dive stuff for the Broncoholics out there. And don't forget, our premium subscribers get 10% off on tickets, 10% off on Broncos team merchandise through Fanatics, and annual members get a one-year subscription to Sports Illustrated included. So go check it out. And follow the show on Twitter, at Locked On Broncos. Just take a second, open the old phone, the Twitter app, and find at Locked On Broncos. Give us a follow. The home of our show, of course, is Audio Boom, but make sure to also subscribe on iTunes and Stitcher, because we have a lot of content coming up this offseason, breaking down the Broncos free agency, the draft, and you're not going to want to miss a single episode. Now, Tuesday, and we talked a little bit about this yesterday, but Tuesday, Vance Joseph introduced his three coordinators. Offensive coordinator, of course, Mike McCoy, defensive coordinator Joe Woods, and special teams coordinator Brock Olivo. Joseph shared some interesting nuggets about the recruiting process of these coaches, and in the case of Mike McCoy, we kind of found out that he was Joseph's first phone call upon taking the job and going about building his staff, and that McCoy was, in fact, Luke, being pursued by four or five different teams. As a former head coach, that doesn't surprise me, Luke, that McCoy was in hot demand around the league.
Well, I mean, it doesn't surprise much at all, especially when you consider a couple of years ago when he was kind of the buzzing name for the head coach position. You know, that was the role he was then. And so he's really been kind of a guy who's thrilled a lot of coaching staffs around the league and front offices with his command of the game, his knowledge of football, not to mention, you know, he's great with the players. He knows what he's doing, and he's pretty good with personnel decisions, too. So I think it makes a lot of sense for a lot of teams to bring in a guy like that, especially considering so many times when you bring in a new coordinator, you have to kind of rebuild the roster. And we saw this happen, you know, when Jim Harbaugh had his power run game in place in San Francisco. He leaves, Chip Kelly comes in, and, you know, overnight it goes from that power run game to much more of a zone based offensive scheme. So you have to completely rebuild your personnel to run that offense. Whereas Mike McCoy has always shown that he's been far more willing to adapt the offense to the personnel that he has, and really kind of build with what's already in place. So that's appealing for coaches. That's appealing for decision makers who know that they're not going to have to go out and put in a whole new set of roster material in order to you know, have some success offensively.
And it was really interesting as well seeing the difference. You know, Mike McCoy being more of an experienced veteran type head coach, a lot more charismatic in front of the media, as opposed to Joseph, who's still kind of getting used to, I think, after 1 year as a coordinator in Miami and now being the head coach, of having to be front and center and under the bright lights of the media. Now, on the defensive side, Joseph made it clear in his remarks Tuesday that Joe Woods was the no-brainer decision to follow in Wade Phillips' shoes and footsteps. And Woods was another guy who had opportunity to go elsewhere, but he chose to stay in Denver to coach what is, I believe, the most prolific defense in the NFL. I thought it was interesting, Luke, how Joseph talked about the process of choosing to keep also Reggie Herring to coach the inside linebackers, Fred Pugich, or Pug as he's known, to coach outside linebackers, and of course Bill Kolar as defensive line coach. It was interesting to hear both Vance Joseph and Joe Woods give props to Kolar as either the best or one of the best D-line coaches in the NFL?
Well, I mean, it starts with the coach when you're talking about personnel. And I think we've seen some of the personnel decisions about that position group in particular be made because you have that kind of coach in place. I mean, I don't think a guy like Adam Gotsis gets drafted in the second round to Denver if they don't think that they have a line coach in place like they do for him to be developed. I mean, a raw athletic guy doesn't, you know, he doesn't come in and contribute from day one. He's got to be refined.
The trunk on that guy, Luke.
Exactly, as they said. And, you know, it takes a coach to bring that out of a guy to refine that athletic ability and teach the technique. And when they have a guy in place like Kolar, they can feel comfortable taking a guy like Adam Gotsis in the second round.
Absolutely. Well, and then we move on to Brock Olivo, also a first-time coordinator like Woods. Olivo underwent a grueling six-hour interview in Denver. Joseph ultimately liked his vision. He liked his youthful energy, I should say, and his experience as a former special teams ace as a player. And I think, too, Luke, reading between the lines, one of the biggest factors to Olivo getting hired was his discipleship under Dave Tobe in Kansas City, with how highly respected Tobe is, obviously, in Dove Valley, one of the top three candidates to be the head coach. The Broncos wanted to capture some of that sizzle, and Olivo was the next best thing.
Well, I mean, in certain areas of the coaching world, if you can't sign him, sign his assistant, it's a pretty common factor. I mean, we've seen it land guys, you know, jobs, obviously, even I think could be said as head coaches in this league. It's happened. So, you know, for that to happen, it's hardly surprising for them to bring him in. He's obviously very highly respected among the league himself. And, you know, he has the experience playing it, coaching it, and really contributing to it that I think he definitely can step up and lead that kind of group himself right now.
Absolutely. And today we're going to focus on Mike McCoy's remarks. Tomorrow, the final show of the week, we'll break down Joe Woods and Brock Olivo, what they had to say. So talking about and focusing on some of the choice nugs that Mike McCoy dropped, we understand the type of Josh McDaniels sort of system that McCoy favors. But with Denver's personnel, you know, throughout this process, ever since he was hired, we've been curious to kind of understand what his system will look like in Denver. Here's what McCoy had to say about that. It was one of the first topics at his presser on Tuesday.
Well, we're going to build our system over time, and that's what we're doing right now. We're working on putting the playbook together, and we're going to, as a staff, you know, we're going to change some things. It's going to be, you know, I've laid the playbook out, the one I'm bringing with me. By then, there's going to be some things that different coaches have called differently, and there's going to be flexibility. We're going to give the players some flexibility also, and when I speak of players, the quarterbacks, if there's certain things that they've called here for the past couple years, if we need to change something so it's more familiar with them, they're the ones playing the game. So this is going to be a very player-friendly system, and that's one thing I think we've always done, whether it's Adam, myself, Coach Kubiak. I think we're always going to try to do what the players do best. So it's going to change, and I can't tell you exactly come the opener exactly this is what it's going to be, because until you actually get on the field in meetings with certain players, I think it's important for us as a staff to say this is what our players do best. If DT's the best guy at running this route, he should be running it. If Emmanuel's better at doing those things, he should be that guy. So that's our job as a coaching, as an offensive staff.
So obviously Mike McCoy is making it clear there that there's going to be some change offensively for the Broncos. But at the same time, Luke, there will be flexibility in the scheme and more of a focus on player compatibility, if you will, a player-friendly system.
Right, and I think that kind of comes out in the way that they are going to coach and kind of scheme some things. You know, I've spoken to NFL coaches around the league on a variety of subjects, and some things that they do have built into the offense or the defense are very much scripted, and they want that to be the certain way that it is. You know, for instance, I was speaking the other day with a coach who said he coaches his quarterback to, in the shotgun, his right foot is up. His right foot is closer to the center because that way he wants, you know, in order to go through the footwork, he has to bring that right foot and take that back, obviously, to open up into your pass set. And that that kind of motion is going to draw the linebackers in because it looks real, right? Even if he's just turning to throw a screen, he's opening up.
Right.
Whereas if that right foot is already back, he doesn't have to swivel as much, and that swivel isn't as pronounced. So that kind of footwork, you know, is important to him. But under center, I asked him about it. You know, how do you coach your quarterback's feet under center? He says, you know what? When it comes to under center, at least the way they line up, I leave that to them. I want them to be comfortable under center because some of these guys, especially coming out of, you know, these college systems where they don't take snaps under center, you know, it's absolutely logical that you want them to be comfortable when they're going to be under center. So, you know, there's certain things that are going to be very player friendly and very much left up to the players, such as, hey, how do you want your feet when you're under center?
Right.
But there's going to be some stuff that it's now in the shotgun, your right foot's going to be up.
Right. Absolutely. Well, and Bronco fans, another thing, have been dying to know what the plan is for the quarterbacks. How does Mike McCoy view Paxton Lynch? How does he view Trevor Siemian? And what is the plan moving forward? What's the objective? Here's what he had to say real quick.
Well, I think what we're going to do is, Vance has already mentioned that it's going to be an open competition with those two players. He stated that a couple weeks back when he took this job, that it's going to be open competition. And I'll say this, there's nothing like competition. That's what makes everyone better. And the great thing for these two young quarterbacks in our entire offense is we're going against a great defense every day. So we're going to be an offense that's going to show up every day and work their tails off and compete. Because if you don't compete against our defense, you'll get embarrassed. So it's going to – every skilled player, every offensive lineman, you're going to have to show up and work your tails off and make sure you do everything the right way to help these players be successful and those two quarterbacks. You know, it's our job in the next couple months to figure out what each one of those guys do and take advantage of their strengths and kind of minimize their weaknesses. And it's going to change, you know, but they're going to start off in the same page of the playbook, and we'll figure that out as time goes and see, you know, what do these two players do and what do they like also. I'm big into, you know, talking to the quarterbacks and installing from a week-to-week basis and looking at our plans and being open with these players and saying, you know, what do you really like? What are your favorites? When we get into the game plans, you know, at the end of the week, I'm going to ask the quarterbacks, you know, what are your favorite plays in these situations? You know, your first and second down calls, what are your favorite plays? Just so they have a lot of confidence, you know, when they're under center on game day.
Now, Luke, here's the truth. Nothing raises all ships like competition. And it doesn't matter what facet of life you compare or look at, whether it's education, business, interpersonal relationships, hell, even my kids and the sibling rivalry, competition brings out the best in people. While I recognize that, I have to wonder how objectively truthful McCoy is being with some of those comments, because the Broncos want Paxton Lynch to be the starter in 2017. In a perfect world, that's what they would prefer to happen, because they have the investment in him as a first-round pick, and they believe in him, they love his potential and his ceiling, but that doesn't mean that he's going to beat out Trevor Siemian in an open competition. So it kind of comes down to, how do you define? It's kind of subjective, really, when you apply it to every team in the NFL as it applies to a quarterback competition. What does that really mean? Paxton Lynch, you know, is he going to have the wherewithal to beat out Trevor Siemian this time around? McCoy also talked about change as it applies to the quarterbacks, the burden that they're taking on themselves, that they're going to have to take these playbooks home in the offseason and really bury themselves in the playbook and assimilate everything as quickly as they can. I love that he's big on communicating with the quarterbacks when it comes to installing plays and identifying these guys' favorites.
Right. Well, when you've got a young quarterback, obviously they know what's going to make them comfortable and they know what's going to make them uncomfortable. And quite frankly, you know, they have end of the year meetings with the coaches, with the coaching staff, where they're going to sit down and say, hey, you know, next year when we're getting in third and short situations, here's the kind of plays I'd really like to see us focus on. Because so many of those money down situations, if it's third down, fourth down, red zone, those are the kind of plays you can run ad nauseum in the spring. You know, at this time of year, when they're in practice, when they want to rep something, they can rep it as much as they want against as many different looks as they want. And that's particularly important on third down, fourth down, and the red zone, where you get all these kinds of defenses that that teams are going to throw at you in that situation, as opposed to a normal situation. Now, of course, with Paxton Lynch in particular, he was a rookie. You know, he didn't get that kind of situation because he didn't get to the team until the draft, really into May. So he never had the opportunity to go through the offseason and say, hey, let's sit down and run these 12, third and short plays that I really want to run. And I want to run this against every kind of defense that you can throw at me. You know, right. He doesn't have that opportunity. And now in the offseason, it's a chance for him to say, hey, you know what? Can we go over again? I want to see how this motion fits up, you know, all that kind of stuff. This is the time for him to really shine and kind of get to engage with what he wants to work on and what he knows he needs to. Because, I mean, these guys are pros. They've been quarterbacks for years.
Good point. And, you know, we've talked about it on this show several times. There's been a lot of buzz about the Broncos possibly targeting a high-profile veteran quarterback in free agency or via trade, a la Peyton Manning, trying to recapture that magic and repeat some history. You know, we've spitballed Phillip Rivers. We've spitballed Tony Romo, with Romo obviously being the most realistic possibility. Although McCoy doesn't make personnel decisions per se. Here's what he had to say about the prospect of bringing in a veteran.
I'm happy with the two guys we have. And that's our number one focus right now, is to get the two quarterbacks we have on our roster ready to play.
I'm happy with the guys we have. Luke, do you buy McCoy's words there, or do they surprise you?
Well, I mean, he can't really comment on, you know, a guy like Phillip Rivers or a guy like Tony Romo, because obviously those guys are both under contract for another team right now. So I think until that kind of opportunity comes available, you know, he's got to say, you know, we've got what we've got. I'm excited for what we've got. But, you know, if one of those guys is going to become available, if he's going to hit the market, I think that's when you're going to see if he were to talk about it, I think that's when you're going to see it.
Another interesting nugget that McCoy dropped on Tuesday was how excited he is about the prospect of calling plays again on game day. After 4 years away from that particular duty as a coach, here's what he had to say about it. I thought it was pretty interesting.
Well, I can say this. I've got a burning desire to call plays, and I did not do that the last 4 years. And that was something hard. You know, you look back the 4 years, but I had a lot of confidence, and I think that Ken Wisenhunt and Frank Reich did an outstanding job for the 4 years I was there in San Diego. And that's why, you know, I was going to say I was going to be in the head coaching role and let those two guys do it. And I was active in all the game planning and all those things. But I must say, after last year when we made a change and Frank moved on, you know, I had a, you know, we discussed the possibility of me calling plays again. And then I went with Ken Wisenhunt. But I've had for 4 years, I've had that, you know, that you kind of miss that. And so I'm excited to get back in this to call plays. And I think the great thing about my job is the staff we've put together, because it's not my offense. This is our offense. This is the Denver Broncos offense that we're building over time. And I think these coaches are going to learn that I talk a little bit more on the headsets on game day. And, you know, I'm going to ask for a lot of input. That's the great thing about adding Jeff Davidson to this staff. And as Vance mentioned, that was the first guy I said we have to get if he becomes available in San Diego, because, you know, I'm going to lean on Jeff with a lot of things on game day. Having worked with Eric and Tyke, you know, is a great plus. They know how I am, and, you know, what I did with Eric the past couple of years when I was here calling plays, you know, he was that crutch I leaned on a number of times at certain times of the game, asking him for his opinion. You know, Bill Musgrave brought me into this business in Carolina in 2000. So we've got a great staff here. So I'm going to lean on those guys a lot. And, you know, Billy taught me a long time ago, if you do your work from Monday to Saturday, it should make calling a game a lot easier on game day. So I'm energized and excited. And I think with this team that we have and this organization, we're going to put a great product on the field and perform and score some points.
A burning desire, Luke, to call plays. How pervasive is that desire for coaches to want to call plays and exert that impact on game day?
Yeah, well, I've called plays certainly in the past, defensively, not necessarily offensively. And, you know, as a position coach, I've been an interim coordinator. You want to really kind of engage in the game as much as you can. And sometimes you know, as a position coach, you're just on the sideline hanging back, watching the game unfold in front of you. And you really wish that there's something more you could be doing for your players instead of just coaching them as they get back to the sideline. So, you know, obviously everybody, you know, sees the game a different way. way. And everybody, I think, among coaches, I would really say wants to call plays, even right. if it's just signaling to their position group, all right, you've got, for example, on the line, you're slanting left, you're slanting right. Just that kind of familiarity, especially as a coach, for them to look over to you and know what to do just based on what you're telling them, even psychologically, is just a boost for coaches.
He has a great reputation, by the way, as a play caller in this league, and I'm really looking forward to seeing him step back into that role with the Broncos. And, you know, we know that the offensive line held the Broncos back from being as successful as maybe their skill position personnel should have allowed them to be as a unit. So what did the Broncos do? One of the first things after Mike McCoy was hired, they made it a priority, was getting out there and getting Jeff Davidson, who we worked with in San Diego, and then also John Benton. One's a power scheme guy, the other's more of a zone acolyte, to coach the offensive line. You look at Denver's personnel along the offensive line, and there are a few guys who stick out, Luke, as poor fits for the power scheme, including their best player, arguably, on the line, Matt Paradis. But here's real quick, we're going to break it down, but here's Mike McCoy's assessment of the Broncos' offensive line as it is currently constituted.
Well, we're in the process right now of evaluating that. Like I mentioned earlier, you know, this week and next Monday, we're going to sit down as an organization and talk about everything. You know, and really, I think as an entire offense, not just the offensive line, we all can improve at every position. There's some things as when you come into a new organization, and we're going to change. And we're going to look at each position and each player. And when the players get back, we're going to sit down with each player and say, here's what we think as your position coach or as a coordinator are your strengths and weaknesses. But I think our offensive line does need to play better. Our offense will go as far as our offensive line will take them. Everyone always wants to look at a quarterback and say, you have to have this quarterback. And I'm not taking anything away from the quarterback position. It is critical. You have that guy. But you got to have the five guys up front playing as one, okay, and doing everything right. They got to protect their tails off so that quarterback can be sit back in the pocket and do what he can do. But then there's also, I think when you talk about the offensive line sometimes and you look at the film and the running game and you may say, hey, the average was only this. Well, very easily, too, I could look at DT and say, DT, you didn't block that safety. Okay, so if you would have blocked that safety, okay, CJ would have had maybe a 20-yard run instead of a 4-yard run. So there's a number of things, I think, that when you look at the offensive line, it's not just them, it's everybody. And that's going to be our emphasis with the whole entire team is we've all got to look at ourselves first, and we've all got to say, okay, how are we going to get better? And what really is good enough as an offense? And we're going to push the limit every day. But I think to really answer your question and sum up all that I just talked about is that they can play better. And I'll tell you this, Jeff Davidson and John will make them play better, and they will play better next year.
So listening to that, McCoy sounds confident that no matter what the lay of the land is personnel-wise for the Broncos when it comes time to practice and roll out some actual football, Davidson and Benton are going to get the most out of them, and maybe even more than what Clancy Barone and, say, Rick Dennison were able to do over the last 2 years, Luke.
Right. Well, you know, he's got his guys that he's handpicked to bring in. And at this point, I think his hopes definitely are high. There's definitely talent on this team. And there's, you know, with this emphasis on a player friendly system, there's definitely, I think, the expectation that they will be able to do that and that they will be able to maximize their players' abilities within this kind of system. I definitely think that, you know, these are guys who know their way around the NFL. And as such, I do expect that they'll be able to certainly develop the younger guys and maximize the veterans within their system.
And that's another thing real quick before we get out of here, Luke, that Vance Joseph talked about as being an added bonus with Jeff Davidson is the fact that he has actually called plays in this league at some point or another in his career. And that savvy and experience also he feels like can be a huge influence on what the Broncos are trying to do as an offense and really turn the ship around in 2017.
I mean, it never hurts to have, you know, enough guys who are experienced calling plays in the league and experienced with really being involved in an offense or defense to that level. I mean, you really have to, you know, there's no such thing in the NFL, to my mind, as too many cooks. You know, this broth can't be spoiled if you've got multiple guys who've been offensive coordinators and defensive coordinators.
Yeah. Well, it's certainly going to be interesting to see how it all unfolds, and we're a few months out, really, from seeing anything out on the field, how this vision gets manifested, but we're going to know soon enough. And thanks for listening, everybody. Again, stay tuned, because tomorrow we are going to analyze Joe Woods and Brock Olivo's introductory remarks. So stay with us. Be sure to follow at Locked On Broncos on Twitter. You can find Luke on Twitter at Luke Polglaze, myself at Chad N. Jensen. We love hearing from you. Keep hitting us up and check out the other killer podcasts on the network. Don't forget to subscribe, y'all. For Luke, I'm Chad. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Mile High Huddle.